Well, good morning, everyone. So we've heard Paul's words, "For the wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of people." I added the word "for" because that's an important word that's missing from our translation. I'm going to come back later as to why that little three-letter word is important. But I think it's true for all of us, especially the preacher, that those are hard words to hear, aren't they? Surely it's enough to get through life by being good. How on earth can God be angry at someone who is nice? You might have heard that a lot. It's something I hear quite often in my role now as a pastor. And I probably thought of that at one point in my life as well. There's a really interesting example in the press this week. So if you put up the first slide, this is Josie Bird. Did anybody hear about Josie Bird this week? So Josie Bird was arrested at the age of 93 as a dying wish after being good all her life. So her granddaughter tweeted this: "A big thank you to all at Greater Manchester Police for, quote, arresting, close quotes, my gran Josie today," she said. "She's 93 years old and her health is failing, and she wanted to be arrested for something before it's too late." "She has a heart of gold and thoroughly enjoyed it today. Thank you for granting her wishes." And she goes on to say that the Greater Manchester Police had made an old lady very happy by arresting her grandmother, saying she's quite poorly, wanted to do something like this while she still has the strength to enjoy it. "She's been good all her life," so she says, "and wanted to have an experience to remember. She is a star." The Greater Manchester Police were quite quick to add that they were still chasing after real criminals whilst they were arresting Josie. So, well, she doesn't look like she's enjoying herself. But I think her story demonstrates to us that sense of complacency that we might have about who is nice, who is good, and therefore should be in God's good books. Now, we don't know about Josie whether she has a faith or not, but how on earth could God be angry? How could he pour out his wrath as somebody as sweet as Josie? And I think it's true, this idea of the wrath of God is something that even the church struggles with. Those of you who were at the cathedral on Saturday when my priesting service was on, some of you might have noticed that the last hymn had a little edit. So this is "Christ Alone," and I've highlighted the line of the, probably know what it should be. Are we going to sing it later? We are. So we'll sing it. We're not going to sing that version, which Gordon said the choir sang the original version, didn't they?
Yeah. But they had the music.
Yeah.
And the music wasn't edited like that.
Yeah. So isn't that quite interesting that even the church struggles with the idea of the wrath of God and changes lines in songs? But what I want us to think about today is that what Paul has to say to us in this part of Romans is a vital part of us understanding what the gospel means. And if we take out God's wrath, then what we're doing is de-gospeling the gospel. If we take out God's wrath, we are de-gospeling the gospel. It takes away a vital aspect of it. And that's why that word "for," that missing linking word in our version that is there in the original, is really important. But before I look at that topic in more detail, I just want to say a little bit about verses 26 and 27, which are the bits which talk about homosexuality. I'm not going to go into detail into that today, not because it's not important. It's actually really vitally important, but it's also a highly sensitive pastoral and moral issue that I just can't do justice to in the time we have today. And also, on this sort of issue, it's wrong to just look at one particular line or verses in the Bible. You need to look at the whole thing. So I'm not ducking it. I'm just saying I'm not going to deal with it today, because it has a really significant moral and ethical implications, both for us as Christians, for the church and for society, that I think deserve a proper separate discussion. And I've written an essay on that subject if you're interested. So we're going to park those verses, if that's okay. And we're going to look at the bigger picture. And there's three things that I want us to look at or to think about, to help us think about what Paul is saying both to the people in Rome when he wrote the letter originally and what he might be saying to us today. So firstly, the first question is, what is the nature of God's wrath? Secondly, what is the reason for that wrath? And then thirdly, what does that mean for us? So question one, what is the nature of God's wrath? I did a little search on my Bible software, and it's surprising how often God's wrath is mentioned in the Bible. When I typed in the word, the search came up with over 100 different verses talking about wrath, or God's wrath specifically. And I think to start with, we need to put aside our own thoughts of what wrath might mean. When we think of it, we might think of intense anger or an outburst of indignation. Somebody, a purple-faced man or woman, being very angry and uncontrolled. But the wrath of God that the Bible speaks of is totally different from that human emotion and that we associate with that word. When we think about God's wrath, we need to think about who God is, that he is holy, and so his wrath is directed against sin. God's wrath is an expression of his hate of everything opposed to his goodness and his holiness. And he cannot be neutral against sin. He's opposed to it, and he has rescued us from sin through Jesus' death on the cross. Let's just pause for a moment and ask yourself this question. Ask yourself this: what would God be like if he were a God that did not hate sin? What would God be like if he were a God that did not hate sin? Well, either he'd be a God who delighted in sin, which we know isn't true, or he was somebody that was not troubled by it. But we know that both of those things aren't true because of Jesus, because of Christ. And God's wrath, properly understood, it's an essential part of his character. It's holy anger in opposition to sin, and it's an essential part of the gospel. If we take God's wrath out of the gospel, we de-gospel the gospel. And without God's anger, there is no need for Christ. And we can't talk of God's love if we remove his anger against sin. So that is what wrath is. So the second question to think about is, what is the reason for God's wrath? What is the reason for God's wrath? Well, if his wrath, his anger, his holy burning anger is a hatred of sin, that sin separates human beings from God, and it's a universal problem. And not one of us, not a single human being apart from Jesus, is without excuse in terms of that. So Paul has already said that God's anger is not directed at those who've turn to Christ in penitence and faith. We already looked in the earlier parts of this chapter that we have received grace. And in verses 16 and 17 that we looked at last week, that we've had salvation and righteousness. But his first argument about he's angry, this first argument is going to unfold over the next few chapters of Romans. But the first argument that he makes in this part that we're looking at today is that we have no excuse because God has revealed himself in his creation. That in what he has made, all the things around us, in his eternal power and his divine nature is clear for all of us to see and to respond to. But what Paul goes on to argue is that humanity has ignored this amazing, clear message from God. And instead, we, including dear old Josie that you saw earlier, all of us have willfully made a terrible exchange. Verse 23 says that we've exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images made to look like a mortal human being and birds and animals and reptiles. Verse 25 says that they exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshipped and served created things rather than the Creator. And as a result of this terrible exchange, we, all of us human beings, we do what we know we oughtn't to do. We do what we know we ought not to do. That we have deliberately repressed what we know to be the right thing to pursue our own desires and agendas. That as human beings, we put people, we put projects, things, our desires first and demote or ignore the truth and glory of God. And I think we all recognise that in ourselves. I know that when I look back on my life, that I know that that is how I was before I met Jesus, pursuing my own desires and prizing my own intellect over God's plan for me. I'll never forget when I was about 15. My granny said to me, I remember her saying, she told me that the world was my oyster. The world was my oyster, which I took to mean that I should go out and get as much of it as I could. Not thinking about other people, not caring about who I hurt. And that's essentially what Paul is saying here about us as humans, is that we are after our own agenda. We've ignored the glory of God and we go after our own things. So that's his argument. God hates sin, that's why he's angry. We're all guilty of sin, firstly, and in this case, because we've ignored what God has already shown us. So that's where we are. So what does it mean for us? Just as it applied to the people in Rome at the time, it also applies to us. Well, the first thing that I want to say is that if you have faith in Jesus Christ, if you have placed him as central in your life, then you have no fear of being subject to God's wrath. Paul's already said that God's anger is not directed at those who've turned to Christ in penitence and faith. In verse 5 of this chapter, he says, we have received grace, which is God's gift of eternal life. And verse 16 and 17, he's already talked about salvation and righteousness. And later on in the letter, Paul says this to the Christians in Rome, and he says it to us today. He says, even though we were God's enemies, we have been reconciled to him through the death of his son. And so if you would call yourself a Christian, then you have that assurance that you have been reconciled to God through the death of his son. And shouldn't that just move us to praise, to worship him? I think it should. That through Jesus Christ we are made right with God. It's a dimension of the gospel. If we take out the gospel, we de-gospel the gospel. It's a dimension of the gospel that should move us to thank God and offer him worship and praise for what he has done through Christ to make us right with God and avert his wrath. What about everyone else, though? What about those who haven't said that yes to Jesus? Well, I found this part of the message, I found this really hard when I was preparing. It is really hard. I was moved to tears about the urgency of that gospel message for those who don't know that. Because when Paul talks about it's God's wrath of God being revealed, it's a continuing process, and it's also something that ultimately is going to come when Jesus returns. So we need to be moved to tears, I think, in the urgency of the gospel message. To ask in prayer for boldness, ask for sensitivity in how we persuade people to see their brokenness without Jesus. And I think just as that picture of all that story of Josie demonstrates, that we need to break our complacency of niceness and goodness. Another thing that I think we should do is not to tolerate the de-gospeling of the gospel. We shouldn't sing songs that take out the wrath of God when that's both biblical and the attention of the writer. But in all of this, there is hope. I don't know if any of you saw earlier this week the opening of the European Parliament, when the 29 Brexit MEPs turned their backs on the anthem, on the Ode of Joy. I don't know if you saw that. I'd have put a picture up, but I didn't want to kind of... I'm not making a political point here. But what they did was symbolic, wasn't it? It's symbolic of either their dislike of the institution of the EU, or what I think they said was their anger at our failure to leave the EU after the Brexit vote. So they turned their backs as an expression of their anger. But the one thing that I'd like you all to go away thinking about today is that God does not turn his back on sin. God doesn't turn his back on sin. He does something about it. And he faced up to it in the most costly way imaginable for him, willingly sacrificing his son to pay the price for our sin. Christ opened his arms on the cross to welcome those who recognized him for who he was, who recognized their brokenness and their need for forgiveness. Christ opened his arms. God did not turn his back on sin. So let us pray.